In our reading, UU Minister Victoria Safford shared how she got a wake-up call on the freeway while alongside another driver who was brushing his teeth. As she put it, "I understand the impulse and I deeply sympathize. After all, I was finishing a muffin when my fellow hygienic passenger passed me on the highway, but I know that brushing while you drive is bad religion. Doing almost any two things at once is bad religion. Rushing is bad religion." Now, there's a lot of other bad religion in other ways. That's partly why we're UUs. But if one form of bad religion is rushing, how might we practice good religion in this sense? In a word, by employing what's known as mindfulness, a concept and practice with roots in Zen Buddhism. The Buddhist term for the technique of developing mindfulness is vipassana, meaning insight or to see clearly, in Pali, the Buddha's native language. And while the term mindfulness gets tossed around a fair bit, a modern Buddhist practitioner and teacher, Bodhipaksa, offers a simple definition. Mindfulness is the gentle effort to be continually present with experience. Teasing this out a little, we might say mindfulness involves paying attention fully to what's happening in the moment. This includes noticing what's entering our senses from our surroundings, as our story for all ages spoke of, along with any thoughts, feelings, or body sensations, without judging or trying to change these. Bodhipaksa also likes the description offered by American medical professor Jon Kabat-Zinn, a pioneering proponent of mindfulness practice since the 1970s. Before sharing and exploring that, some brief background. A student of both Western medicine and Zen Buddhism, Jon Kabat-Zinn wanted to bring the Buddhist mindfulness practice he was encountering to a wider audience. So he essentially repackaged it by excising any overtly religious aspects and accentuating its physical and mental health benefits, and ended up with a technique that could be tested scientifically. Generally, what's tested is an 8-week program Kabat-Zinn developed called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, or MBSR, which he envisioned largely as a public health vehicle. Starting out with one stress reduction clinic, now called the Center for Mindfulness in Medicine, Healthcare, and Society at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, over time, he and other researchers indeed validated many benefits of practicing mindfulness, which has been shown to lower physiological and psychological stress, reduce anxiety, ease less severe depression, improve sleep, and even help alleviate harmful eating behaviors and interpersonal difficulties. It's since been largely accepted by mainstream medicine, and mindfulness apps like Headspace and Calm together count several million subscribers. So let's return to Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness and then explore it a bit. Mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, non-judgmentally. I'll repeat that. Mindfulness, says Kabat-Zinn, means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, non-judgmentally. Clearly, there are three parts to this, which we'll take one by one. First, mindfulness involves paying attention on purpose. That is, it involves a conscious direction of our awareness. Bodhipaksa points out that people sometimes refer to the terms mindfulness and awareness as if they were interchangeable, but suggests that it's not accurate. Because we may be aware, for example, that we're irritable, but that doesn't mean we're being mindful of our irritability. In order to be mindful, one has to be purposefully aware of oneself, not just generally and habitually aware. Again, for instance, knowing that you're eating is not the same as eating mindfully. When we are mindful, We are paying attention on purpose. We are fully present to the process of eating. We are consciously noticing the sensations and our responses to those sensations. We may notice our attention wandering away from eating, and when it does, we deliberately bring our attention back. When we eat unmindfully, we're certainly aware that we're doing so, but we may be thinking about other things at the same time and may also be watching TV, reading, or whatever. So a very small part of our awareness is actually focused on eating. So again, the first part of Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness involves paying attention on purpose or purposefully to what we're doing. The second part is paying attention in the present moment. Buddhism emphasizes that left to itself, the mind wanders through all kinds of thoughts, including troubling thoughts sometimes of anger, craving, depression, overwhelm, self-pity, etc. And the teachings say that if we indulge these thoughts, we automatically reinforce the accompanying emotions and cause ourselves to suffer. Mostly such thoughts are about the past or future. But the past no longer exists, and the future is just a fantasy. The only moment we can actually experience is the present one. So in mindfulness, we focus on what's arising in the present moment. We practice fully experiencing what's going on right now. That doesn't mean we no longer think about the past or future, but when we do, we're fully aware that we're doing so. And if thoughts about the past or future take us away from our present experience, we try to notice this and come back to now. If we're folding our clothes, for example, we really feel the texture of the fabrics and see the way our movements give shape to them. The payoff, says Bodhipaksa, is that by purposefully directing our awareness toward our present experience, we create an inner space of freedom where calmness and contentment can thrive. And even brief pockets of peace can have a large ripple effect. The third and final part of mindfulness is paying attention non-judgmentally. Mindfulness, says Bodhipaksa, is an emotionally non-reactive state. Whether it's a pleasant experience or a painful experience, we treat it the same. Mentally, we're aware that some experiences are pleasant and some aren't, but on an emotional level, we don't become distressed because we're not experiencing something we don't want to, or because we are experiencing what we want to. We simply observe whatever arises, notice it passing through us, and most often see it ceasing to exist. This does not mean that we do not have emotionally intense experiences, but if we do, we are fully present to those. It does also not mean that we passively accept personal or societal injustice and exploitation. It means that even when acting to counter these, we seek to maintain what Buddhism calls equanimity, stillness and balance of mind, which can only enhance our efforts. So to repeat Jon Kabat-Zinn's full definition once more, mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, non-judgmentally. Now, of course, this is easier said than done. But that's why it's called a practice. We get better as we do it. And along with other benefits, over time, it often reduces what Buddhism calls that incessant brain chatter, monkey mind. And in fact, it lights up parts of our brains that aren't normally activated when we're mindlessly running on autopilot. This enhances focus, meaning we can connect more fully with ourselves and our experience, our chosen activities. Some world-class athletes, for example, use mindfulness practice to enhance their performance. And we can connect with others because we are totally present to them. We're not having a conversation with three-quarters of our mind having a different one inside. Connecting with others is what many of us desire most during this holiday season. And I titled this talk, Mindful Amid the Flurry, because sometimes our ability to connect is undermined by the frenetic flurry of holiday activities that has been called the pressure cooker of merriment. So for the remainder of our time, I want to quickly share some suggestions by neuropsychologist Jennifer Wolken that might make it more likely to connect with your particular holiday happenings and those you share them with in a deeper way. Here are four common stressors Wolken outlines that can pop up this time of year, along with mindful antidotes. They don't all contain every aspect of our three-part definition, but the spirit is the same. These are mostly her words, occasionally paraphrased by me. Stressor number one, demands on time. During the December holidays, our schedules often fill up with demands and commitments to the point of being overwhelming. Antidote, understand that you don't need to say yes to everything. Giving and giving without stopping is not an altruistic act or notion. It is important to be mindful of when we need refueling and take the time and space to do that. Number two, loneliness. The longing to spend the holidays with those we love and those we desire to love may create feelings of loneliness. We might also feel pressure to find the so-called perfect gift for these people so that instead of a joyful endeavor, gift giving becomes a chore and we end up feeling isolated and sometimes even resentful. Antidote. Wolken suggests donating our time to help those less fortunate. The holidays are a particularly poignant time, she says, to connect with those who don't have as many resources as we do, which really puts our own loneliness and other pain in perspective. Stressor number three, expectations of perfection. While it is nice to take the time to create aesthetically pleasing experiences for ourselves and others, we may get caught up in the trap of perfection, which sets us up to experience a lot of disappointment. Antidote. Reflect on the meaning of the holidays. Says Jennifer Wolken, it's hard to stop and smell the roses at any time of year, and it is especially easy to get caught up in the commercial version of what the holiday season means today. But taking the time to mindfully reflect on what really matters, whether it be our religion or tradition or even the healing power of love, helps us to keep our perspective as the year draws to a close. And stressor number four, family anxiety. Family stress shows up in many ways. Antidote, do your best to engage in gratitude. While there might very well be real difficulties surrounding the interpersonal dynamics of our family, make the mindful effort to step back and count your blessings. Gratitude goes a long way when it comes to overall wellness. Amid these and other possible pitfalls, if we're blessed to enjoy some holiday happy times, we can practice mindfulness by really being present to and relishing them. It might be your children's or grandchildren's faces as they reflect a Christmas tree's twinkling lights or wonder at the glowing candles of Hanukkah, which begins at sundown tonight. Or often in either case, their smiles or those of other loved ones as they open gifts. Yet whatever our situation, we can be mindful of the sights, sounds, and sensations that are present. We can fully experience our family and our friends and anything else. Because what happens if we're not mindful? John Lennon's well-known lyric is fitting, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. And many of those plans happen in our unmindful monkey minds. So as you practice mindfulness, you'll likely find yourself feeling calmer, kinder, and more patient. Inner shifts that can also generate welcome changes in other parts of life. And when you forget, and you will, forget it. Recall Bodhipaksa's words that mindfulness is the gentle effort to be continuously present with experience. It's not one more thing to try to do perfectly. So indeed, be gentle with yourself and simply start paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally, again. Which brings us back to our reading and Victoria Safford's Highway Awakening. She writes, I resolve again, I will emphasize again, to go more slowly, to do one thing and then another, to watch the sky and hear the geese and greet them as I do every soul I meet, one by one, by one, by one. There are hawks to see now on the southbound side and sumac flaming red. There are skunks, porcupines, and shadows of deer and the tender fog that hugs our mountains just off the exit heading west. I will brush my teeth some other time. For me, the key here is I resolve again and again and again as often as it takes. Namaste and blessed be.